thanks for tuning in to Beyond the Matrix. This is the program that asks you, that dares you, to think outside the box of convention and set your mind floating in the free thinking zone. And my job is to help you do that, and so that's why this show has been born. And tonight we're going to be talking with Jap Van Etten, Dr. Jap Van Etten, who is an old, I have to say, he may not know it yet, but I really believe he's part of an ancient soul family of mine, and you probably will think so too by the end of this show. Jap was born and educated in the Netherlands. He received his PhD in biology in Amsterdam, specializing in ecology. And for the past 17 years, his focus has been on metaphysical ecology, and from there, I don't know how he got to being an expert on crystal skulls, but I just know we're going to have an evening full of excitement where we find that out. And those of you who know me or have been listening all this time know that crystal skulls are at the center of my attention and experience. So without further ado, let me bring in Jap Van Etten. Hello?
Hi, Patricia.
There he is. How are you doing, Jap?
I'm doing very well, and it's exciting to be on the show, and I can feel that we had a connection from the very first time that we were talking, and it will be very exciting to exchange during this particular show with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. By the way, everyone, the name of his wonderful book, if you haven't read it yet, is Crystal Skulls, Interacting with a Phenomenon. And I really want to say that out of all the few books that are out now, perhaps this is the most hands-on manual of what to do, how to understand what's going on with these skulls. So since this subject has come into the foreground, not only because of the movie, which we're all talking about, but because we are approaching 2012 and this is part of the anticipation of what's going to happen, we're going to ask Jap to give us some insights, first of all, into what it is that he means by interacting with a phenomenon.
Yeah, well, you know, crystal skulls, and I think you will agree with me, is literally a phenomenon. And the reason that it's a phenomenon is because it really grasps people's attention without often not knowing exactly why that is. And once they connect deeper with them, they really get hooked on them. I've seen.
I'll drink to that.
Yes, yes. You know, I've seen people who started with buying one little skull because they had heard about it or they came to one of our meditation evenings. And then you see them later and I say, well, how is it? And are you still interested in the crystal skulls? And they look with me then with these glimmering eyes. You will not believe it. I have already 40 of them. Yeah, this is something that we have heard many times, you know, and some people.
In fact, my first crystal skull came into my life, let's say in this lifetime, back at least about 30 years ago, and there really were very few people talking about skulls. In fact, it was so hard to even understand what it was that was compelling me then, but of course, I'm sure you agree that we have this archetype in our primordial consciousness, our collective subconscious, however you want to call it.
No, I totally agree. You know, that's why people who have had never any connection, and that's how it started for me as well. I even didn't know what a crystal skull was until somebody played a little trick with me and asked me to close my eyes because she wanted to show me something or at least to experience something. Put this crystal skull in my hand and I'm sitting there sobbing as a grown-up guy for about half an hour, and I even didn't know what I had in my hands. It is that knowing on a certain level that for some people is a very emotional first connection, for others just a simple, very joyful first connection, but somewhere in our, you can say, subconscious, connected with the collective subconscious, we know about it. Many people know about it, have worked with it in past times, or simply pick up from that subconscious field and say, oh, I resonate with that.
Indeed. Well, you know, we should be talking tonight also about the difference between working with crystals, because as you know, I've been a crystal healer for, I can't even remember how long, 30 years, 35 years. and the phenomenon of working with crystals and the properties of crystal, and then how the, I would say, the intention of the carver, whoever that could be in modern and ancient crystals, affect or create a different experience for the student or guardian of a skull. Would you like to talk about that?
Oh, yeah, because this has been, from the very beginning, one of my big questions. You know, the reason that this woman was giving me a crystal skull in my hand was because I was very excited about crystals. And we, at that time, I had bought many large and sometimes very large crystals all spread in my house, and trying to understand their energies, play with them, do healing work with them, creating fields with them. So I was amazed, actually, that with that background in working with crystals, a crystal skull could have that tremendous effect on me. And it didn't make any sense in the first instance, not to my logic, scientific mind, which, besides my ability to feel and tune into, still regularly plays a role as well. With, you know, I think it's a nice balance between the two. But, you know, the question came up, and I have not been able to answer that question for a long time. And I've worked with many people who are psychic, can feel, sense, see energies, in order to get a little bit of a deeper understanding for, is there a difference between the form that you give to that crystal, like a crystal skull, and maybe other forms as well, if you compare that with the original form of the crystal? And my opinion is that in most cases it's not. So if you, excuse me, for example, take a sphere, yes, that sphere is looking different, so the way the energies flow through them, and so the experience of them, is different, but fundamentally you're still talking about the basic frequencies of a crystal, and the form just changes the way those particular energies are, say, flowing through the crystal and connecting with you. And the same is true when you carve it into any form, like an angel or a dolphin or
sure,
whatever forms people nowadays like to have. So I call them, they are connectors to that consciousness or that field, but they are not, let's say, having any particular change in the fundamental energies of the crystal.
But of course the intent of the carver is, in, let's say, held in memory within the structure of the crystal itself, within the cellular, within the cellular network or the cellular memory of the skull itself.
True. So what you see is their intent, their consciousness, you can say, is downloaded then in that form. Yeah, so it,
right,
it contains that information so that it's more easy for people to connect with whatever the carver wanted to express. But that is, at least in my experience, different with crystal skulls. And as I said, I didn't understand that until I started studying through photos or through a person who was actually doing carving and looking at the different steps. And now, it's not always easy to talk about it. Sometimes it's nice to have an image so that it can be shown to people, but let's do the best we can. The crystal has a number of, you can say, rings of energy around them. And the number of rings is depending on the level of activation or activity of that particular crystal. And you can say that every step, every ring is like an overtone. It's like, you know, when you hit the keys of the piano, each one is the next tone, and together they form a whole system, and you can go to many different layers of that same system. The same is true for a crystal. So
in fact, it's very interesting
layers,
working with Tibetan bowls with crystal. Because
yeah,
if you've got a good 7 or 9 metal Tibetan bowl, which have the overtones in them, you can really activate those crystal skulls, which I'm sure you've done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm losing my breath while we're talking now. What does this mean?
Sorry?
I say I keep seem to be running out of breath as we're talking, so I'm going to take a nice deep breath here.
Yeah.
So, what is your experience when you work with sound with crystal skulls?
What is happening with sound, and the same is happening with light, is that they're all vibrations that are awakening different types of information and energy into the different crystals and crystal skulls. So in that sense, it's a way to help us to to access what is, let's say, brought in or came into as information into the different crystals and crystal skulls.
Indeed. So, Jap, do we want to talk about the myth, or some people believe myth, some people like you and I believe history of the skulls dating as back at least as Atlantis or Lemuria? We have many legends,
you know,
many belief systems. I'd like to really get to the heart. And you've read my book, Atlantis Rising, so you've seen an interpretation as well. And I'd like to nonetheless see, of all the things you've heard and all the channels and all of your own interpretations, what comes closest to your belief system about the origins of the so-called original 13 skulls?
Well, I can resonate very strongly with what you have written in your book, Atlantis Rising. Very, very
strongly.
Well, that's
strongly. Good to hear. A whole great spirit.
You know, from the very beginning. And, you know, one of the things that I find sometimes difficult to define is the names that you or other people are giving. But what is important for me is the essence of what you are sharing. And the essence of what you are sharing about the fact that there is that particular information that has been given in different forms in 13 holders, if you want, is something that I absolutely, totally, totally resonate with. So the story of given information, the information given to mankind, is a story that we see coming back in many different myths and many different traditions. And we can say that the variation in the tradition is people's way of understanding what it means, or their attempt to understand what it means. And that's why we see all those differences. But if you really look into it, we see what comes back is that apparently 12 plus 1, 13, is a very, very important number. And if you go into sacred geometry, we see that reflected. You know, Plato was already talking about that one form, which was called the dodecahedron, which has 12 sides, that he said is related to the universe. So according to him, all information systems are based on that number of 12, and the 13th is that brings that 12 to a higher level of understanding or working with it. And it is so beautiful that Plato already was saying it, that we see that in many different traditions, but we are losing somewhere sometimes the deeper meaning of it. And I'm very happy that the crystal skulls and all the stories about the crystal skulls and the original way they came into this universe is simply reflecting very ancient knowledge about the importance of the number 13, the 12 plus 1.
And do you believe that this is symbolic, this story, or do you actually believe that there was this, let's call it a galactic, intergalactic computer system, for lack of a better expression.
Oh, I don't believe
12
that.
12 crystal skulls together in a circle.
Yes, I don't believe that.
This is reminiscent of a room filled with high-tech computer technology, taking out, of course, the heart of it all that we feel when we talk about the skull.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Now, if you realize that crystal, by definition, has the ability to store tremendous amount of information.
Exactly.
You know, the size, and this is pure technology we are talking about now, the size of a sugar cube can contain holographically a whole library. So you imagine that if you have a life-sized quartz crystal skull, how much information there are. Tremendous volume of libraries can be put in that one. It is beyond our comprehension at this moment in time. So in that sense, I like your term, supercomputer. Put 12 of those different systems together, and there is an amount of information available to mankind that we can truly, with our brain, not grasp.
Well, this is what I'm getting, that these skulls were brought into this dimension from higher light beings, higher beings.
True.
And that in the formation of their being together, this 13th skull appearing was a holographic, the master key, the holograph that was formed from the union of these 12. And when we think about how our own computer knowledge was born, the silicon chip, this is crystal. The nature of crystal, or the essence of crystal, is silicon. So this, looking at it this way, taking out a lot of the romance for a moment, it makes perfect sense to me that we're talking about and intergalactic computer systems.
Oh, yes, I absolutely agree with that. You know, it's so beautiful that we can give it now terms like you do that is reflecting something that people can understand. Well, if we talk about information systems that, without giving that a deeper understanding, practical understanding, still keeps something like, oh, well, that's a wonderful idea, but where is it based on? As soon as you talk about quartz and how it's used as chips in computers and other systems, immediately it makes sense.
Yeah, in fact, I think it's really wonderful at a time when so much really heady information is coming to us that we stay grounded as much as possible in terminology and experience that people can, that contemporary knowledge can assist with, so that we don't have to, we can bridge the gap, as you said earlier, and watch science and spirit merge in terminology that we can embrace, so that we can get on with, over the war between science and spirit, and on with the wonder of how these two aspects of our being combined to, in a way, return us to what we already knew, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, if you say those words, you know, you really touch my passion, because as a scientist, it's one of the things that I have missed is the fact that we could not bring in what you can call feminine qualities, spiritual qualities, because that was not scientific. Well, that is beginning to change, and we have to give thanks to quantum physics that's truly helping us to understand that it's not only about what we see as the physical world, but also the invisible world is interacting with the visible one, with the physical one, and that we only can understand everything that we are experiencing is if we are willing to include that what right now is not yet visible for us, and that we need to use our senses and other systems to really tap into that information system that we now call the subtle invisible world. And that is a tremendous step forward, because you know that is where the old esoteric people were already talking about, and now suddenly scientists are beginning to talk about, and that's where we see where the bridging is beginning, and I'm sure it will only expand.
I know. In fact, the aspect that scientists are now coping with more and more, that they recognize that as being an observer of a test or an experiment, they can affect the experiment. This is wonderful, because they really are integrating the knowledge and understanding of consciousness and matter. Mind over matter, the old term, the scientists are finally embracing it.
Yeah, they do. Well, not all of them, because as you may understand...
Yeah, not all of them.
This beautiful experiment and you prove something, it's like, well, you know, it was because you had that expectation and you were also an observer, so really it doesn't have all the value other than the fact that you have created this beautiful result. Most scientists do not yet want to go there.
Yeah, but when we talk about scientists on this conversation, let's refer to free-thinking scientists, because
yes,
they are
I agree.
More and more, thank goodness.
Oh, yes, and it's going fast and faster, you know, so that's the
beauty. Yeah, it's just really quite remarkable what we're seeing develop now, and it's been, you know, for us old spiritualists, it's really, you know, a long time coming.
Oh, yes, I agree with you.
So, Jeb, you and I, when we talked the last time, we talked about the difference, you know, the terminology now is original or the real skulls. And we've talked about how contemporary skulls are also real skulls, and let's keep a sense of wonder about the potential 13 or 12 Atlantean skulls coming back, but also embracing the idea that even the contemporary modern skulls reflect back an incredible amount of knowledge and strength and power and light.
True. You know, more and more, the longer I work with crystal skulls, the more I feel uncomfortable with people getting into that skull is older and thus more important. Because every skull, to my opinion, is important. It is up to the caretaker and the way the caretaker works with the skull or allows other people to work with the skull what determines more the value. Over time, you know, I made a joke recently in respect to that. So there will be a time when all contemporary scholars, especially those that are now going into the 10 years, regularly visit ancient crystal skulls are exchanging information. They communicate with each other. There's recently a very nice book that was published. It's only so far in German, so it's not yet available in English. But it is written by a woman called Karen Tuck, and she uses the photon camera to make energies visible that we otherwise hardly or not can see. And if you put two crystal skulls together, you can literally see that there is an energy band between those two crystal skulls. And when you let them stay together for a little bit longer, you see that the colors of the energies are changing over time. That is so fascinating. So this is what many people who are psychic and can see energies have shared with us already several times. If you really begin to understand what that means, it simply means that all those people who go to an ancient crystal skull like Max or the Mitchell Hedges or Synergy or whatever skull they are going to and put their skull next to them, their skull is not the same anymore. They take some
information.
And that
going back to the crystal, the computer terminology, it's a matter of downloading. If you have access to some of these master skulls and you put your skulls next to them and your intention is that they download and receive the information, they can receive that stored information.
Absolutely.
Like
and
downloading
even
computer.
Without our intention, it's already happening. Because
this
you just
true.
Put them together and you see in the energy that something is happening, there is some exchange taking place already. So let alone when you do it with intent, and then we go back to stories of people who seemingly did that already in the times, and that there are native people who use the crystal skull to transfer information from a person to a person by putting the crystal skull in between them and laying head to head with the skull in between. There are stories that how shamans were transferring information to their students. Well, it's
they were like laptop computers.
Exactly.
Let's compare these traveling shamans with their skulls to people who are today walking around with their laptops.
It's exactly the same principle.
I mean, because if we take the mysticism out of it and we look at it that way, we get a lot more, it's more simple to look at it that way. It demystifies it. Not that I want to lose the mysticism, but it makes it simpler for so many people to understand how this works.
True. But what we also see that if we allow computers to talk with each other, at a certain moment, all the computers contain the same information, the same basic information.
By the way, we are so synchronistic. I told you this when we talked the other day, because I've been in touch with Karen Todd. And for the people that are listening, her name is Karen, T-A-G. You can look her up on the Internet. She's doing fabulous work with a sort of Curlian. Is it Curlian photography?
No, it's a photon. It's a photon camera.
It's a photon camera.
So it uses the small light particles that they capture in the camera and then put in a computer so that you can look at it, work with it, explain it, and so on.
Well, this is really amazing because she and I have been in contact. In fact, she wants to come out and photograph me working with my crystals. So hopefully I'll be able to send you some of that information to study.
Nice,
And for people that are listening, by the way, on July 5th, there is a Crystal Skull Conference in Milan, Italy, and I'm one of the speakers. And we are also going to have, believe it or not, Anna Mitchell Hodges Skull with Bill Lohman, who is the new guardian, and Joshua Shapiro, who is well known to many of the Crystal Skull devotees, who is bringing a few of his skulls. So if you are in Europe and are interested, please come to my site, www.syrianrevelations.net, or email me. You can pick up the email from the site, and I'd be happy to furnish more information for you. And I'm even trying to get Karen Tag to come to this and see what she can do with photography. There.
Yeah, I've seen her at work. She was in Tucson, in Arizona, and when two interesting skulls were meeting each other for the first time, the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull and Synergy, and she was there with her skull, where she was, of course, Corazón de Luz, that's the name of her skull, and those three skulls together are really interacting, and she grabbed that on photos with her photon camera. So I'm sure that if she is able to come, she can show people, that dynamic that is occurring. And for many people, it will be very helpful to see something instead of hearing about it.
Yeah.
I think that's the gift that Karen Tuck is really bringing to us now.
It's amazing because, you know, people hear psychics say, oh, I see the aura, and they always wonder if, I mean, they feel like they're out of the loop. So if we've got someone who can technically bring that forward, this is phenomenal development.
Oh, yes, it absolutely is. For people who are speaking German or can read German, the book is available already in Germany, Mysterium Kristallenschädel. So it's very, very interesting book with a lot of photo in color that can show you how energies are changing when skulls are together, when a person holds a skull, when you put a skull next to tap water that was not all that good looking, but immediately begins to interfere with that water in a way that the water quality is improving. She has some very interesting things in her book. Very, very worthwhile read.
Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to contact Karen and I'm going to ask her if she would be willing to let me put one or two of her photos on my site. In the meantime, her name, don't forget it, it's Karin, KarinTag, and I'm sure that you could find many things about her on the net. And while we're talking about who is who, let's not forget that my guest today is Jaap van Etten, and his book is Crystal Skulls, Interacting with a Phenomenon, a really wonderful, wonderful book put out by Light Technology Publishing. So getting back to the book, let's talk about, I'm not sure if there are any people that don't know about Anna Mitchell Hodges, but just to keep everybody on the same page, as to speak, tell us a little bit about what you know about Anna Mitchell Hodges' skull. And there's been a lot of controversy about that skull, so let's clear that up.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of controversy, and there is recently another book, I think last month, appeared another book that just only put fuel on the fire, so to speak. Well, the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull is, from a certain perspective, the skull that was most famous, because there is not... It's the skull that has been most described, written about. There are several books about, solely about that skull. Many articles have been written, many documentaries have been... It has been subject in many documentaries. So it is a skull that, without any hesitation, we can call famous. And it is unique because it's not anymore the only skull, but let's say the only skull that people consider to be ancient that has a detachable jaw. So the lower jaw it can be removed from the upper part of the skull.
Okay, let me interrupt you just a moment. Wasn't this part of the belief that the Mayan belief that the skulls all would sing when they were together?
Yeah, true. There is a story about the singing skulls, meaning
mm-hmm.
that they... But the story originally was that the type of quartz was special, that the quartz itself was singing. In the story, they were talking about the singing skulls and the talking skulls, because the singing skulls were the one that had very special qualities, so they were having the special tones that other crystals didn't have. And what they called the talking skulls were the skulls that were giving information if you were tuning into their system. But the interesting thing is that the story is that it was found in 1924 in Belize. And it was found in a temple from a big complex, actually a city, a Mayan city, that is believed to be, even among the Mayan different ruins, to be very unique, because the stones and the way they have built it makes it different. And many people are still wondering whether it is really a Mayan structure. Well, on her 17th birthday, she found the skull, according to the story. And first she found the skull, and later she found the jaw. Well, many people have attacked that story severely because there is no documented evidence even that she has been in Belize at all, at least not in that time frame. And it is, according to people, highly unlikely that people who were photographing all kinds of things during their expedition would not photograph the skull, and there is no evidence it was found in that particular ruin. So you may understand that this has evoked a lot of stories, and there is a documented evidence that F.A. Mitchell Hedges, the father of Anna, basically brought to the skull at an auction in London for £400. Well, that are the two things that you may understand is giving a lot of friction. Well, Anna sticked to the story of her finding it her whole life. Now, what is happening in this time frame is that people say, well, it's very interesting. We believed it was an ancient skull, but now we don't believe that anymore because there is no evidence it was found here and there or wherever it was found. So it must have been a fake, and it was carved in Idar-Oberstein in Germany, where they did very high-quality carving towards the end of the last century. So that is what people tend to believe now.
Well, what is the basis of this story that it was a Sotheby's sale, right?
Yes, that's correct, yes.
So this,
but, you
is
know, so this is, these are the factual things where people play with. Now, now comes the point, what do people truly believe? Well, this, of all the ancient skulls that I've seen, and I've seen quite some, the Mitchell Hedges for me is still very, very special. I would say to anybody who is listening, if you ever get the opportunity to see that skull, really use that opportunity. Not only because it is physical, very beautiful, it looks beautiful, it's very clear, but also because you feel, you don't have to be very sensitive to feel that that is a very special artifact. That in and of itself, from my perspective, is for me enough. And the reason that I'm saying that is, I have heard over time stories that I can prove that they were not correct. And why are people telling different stories? Well, one of the main reasons is, sometimes you do not want to tell where the skull truly came from, because there are all kinds of laws that make countries claiming that skull back.
That's
so that's
right.
One of the main reasons. I know, and I will not give names, but I know some people who hold ancient crystal skulls will tell a story that I know is not true. And they will admit it if you are not getting to know them a little bit better. But that is their story to cover up that it came from a place that if that country would know it, say, hey, we want that skull back.
Yeah.
So
especially, well, I mean, the Anna Mitchell Hedges skull, I think, is really, it's been so famous for so long, it's one of the real triggers for our memory of these pure, beautiful skulls. And
oh, I agree.
Naturally, this is worth a lot of money. Let's start with that.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, we have to congratulate or celebrate the fact that Bill Lohman has taken on this responsibility of, and he's determined, from what I understand, to bring the skull to as many places as possible so that people can connect with it.
Yeah, and Bill has a very wise attitude. He's saying, you know, I don't know about all these stories. I wasn't there. I hear them. I've heard many different versions. I hear many different beliefs. For me, it's important to bring this skull out to allow people to experience that this skull is really something special. And I deeply honor him for his willingness to do that, even although people are sometimes pretty fiercely attacking him and call him now the liar, which actually they mean that Anna Mitchell Hedges was the liar. I honor him for doing that.
So do I. And, you know, people overlook one very important point with this whole debate, and that is it's very hard to believe Sotheby's would sell anything fake.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, I agree
so
with you.
So why was it even, I mean, if you're talking about something being for sale on Sotheby's, still, I mean, where does this skull originate from? It's very hard to believe that such an item would be a simple reproduction of an unknown skull, because if it were a reproduction, then by nature of its being a reproduction, there would have to be an original,
mm-hmm.
Right?
True.
So if it is the only one, it's not a reproduction. It's a real something. And
well,
I just don't think that Sotheby's would be putting up for auction a simple contemporary crystal skull. What would be the significance of it? It's such a prestigious event as the Sotheby's sale.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. But basically we can almost, you know, skip the discussion because we can simply say, of all the skulls that were claimed to be ancient, we know only the last part of their history.
Exactly.
Only the very last part. Some of it is only 30, 40 years. Some is maybe, in very exceptional situations, slightly over 100 years. But for the rest, we don't know. And the only skull that really is known where it was found, in what dig it was found, is Shanara, which is the skull that was held by Nick Nocerino, who passed away a couple of years ago, and was really the father of all crystal skull research. He has been doing research on...
That was found on a dig, right?
Yes, that was found on a dig.
Shanara. And who is the guardian of Shanara now?
His family. Yeah, his wife and his daughters are keeping it at the moment at home. And they are, at the moment are not stepping out with the skull in the same way anymore for personal reasons.
Yeah, I guess.
But, the other ones, we really don't know the story other than, I got it from that person who said that it came from a shaman who didn't give information where it originally came from other than, we had it for a while in our possession. So we don't know. We don't know.
Well, the shamans are very tight-mouthed about things.
Exactly. Yeah.
The shamans are very tight-mouthed about things. They're not like Westerners that just, on and on and on with stories. They're very careful what they say and very limited words because what they're looking for is for you to feel it.
Exactly. To experience it and to feel it.
Exactly.
And that is what I think is the best advice that we can give to people who want to experience crystal skull. Well, experience.
Right, because you can get so mental about it and miss the whole experience. So we want people to stay in their heart and stay centered and get near these, in some cases, near is not the word, because so many people now just find themselves, as you said, more and more and more skulls coming into their lives.
Oh, yes.
And that I would like to announce that, as you already know, I'm being blessed with becoming the guardian of a Himalayan skull.
Yep.
And I will have this skull July 5th at the convention. Uh-huh. It's coming to me from a friend at the convention. So that's going to be quite a day for Pat because it'll be the first time I encounter the Anna Mitchell Hodges skull as well.
Yes.
So expect a call from me, Jeff.
You will definitely have a tremendous good time. And I'm sure...
Okay, I'm just going to introduce him again. For those of you who come in late, we're speaking with Jaap van Etten, someone very, very knowledgeable and connected to the crystal skulls. His book is Crystal Skulls Interacting with a Phenomenon, and it's really getting out there and getting more and more people in tune with the phenomenon of the skull. All right, speaking of Himalayan skulls, Jaap, do you want to talk about... this wonderful information that you talk about in the book about Frank Lu?
Yeah, I think the Chinese
Dr. Frank
call
Lu
it Frank Lu, but yeah.
Frank Lu, and his discovery, how he came about discovering these Himalayan skulls.
Yeah, the story, his actual story, as I heard it from him personally, I met him when he was traveling around with the 13 large ones that he had at that time. And what he was sharing was that he got signals from people who were traveling around in the Himalayan that they had found places which were some very interesting artifacts, amongst other crystal skulls. And being an artifact collector, he was getting very excited, but it was in a very remote area. So it took him a while to put an expedition together, and that's when he found the first of the Himalayan skulls in caves. And the story was that were the caves where people before had found all kinds of discs that were called the Drupa discs, because they found in the same caves the skeletons of very tiny people who were around 4 feet high, 4 to 5 feet. And those tiny people were, in one way or another, trying to record their history according to what the interpretation was of the people who studied the material. And their history most likely was recorded on the discs and in the crystal skulls. Well, over time, in the different visits, Frank has found 13 large ones, also some others, but they were so totally different that he doesn't consider them really to be the same Himalayan skulls, and he found 8 small ones.
And one of these is Heartstar, right?
Sorry?
One of these is Heartstar?
One of these is Heartstar, exactly.
Which, for those of you who are listening, is a beautiful little Himalayan skull that is held by a guardian in Sedona, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
And I had the pleasure of meeting that little skull in Glastonbury.
Mm-hmm. In Glastonbury, yes. And at the moment, it's again in Glastonbury.
Well, that's good,
staying for
because
a
I'm going to sneak it out again because I'll be there soon.
Yes. So those, basically what happened with Frank is when he was traveling around with his 13 larger skulls doing different ceremonies, and that's how we met, he was rather strongly criticized, as that's what's happening with almost every story around ancient crystal skulls. So he, at a certain moment, got very frustrated with the way he was treated. He left, ultimately, the United States and left the crystal skulls behind and sent later over also the small ones and decided to sell them. So what happened was that they got spread towards different caretakers who have one or two or sometimes even three of those crystal skulls and are really taking care of them. It's Elizabeth Keller, who is the caretaker of the skull you just mentioned, Heartstar. She wants to bring at least the small ones all together during an event that will happen in Sedona, where also the Mitchell Hedges Crystal Skull and Synergy were coming. And that's an event that's in the last weekend of September. And for
yeah,
her,
I was just going to announce that, and I'm so frustrated that I can't be there because I've got a group in Peru.
Yes, yes.
So can you give people information on who to contact to find out about that gathering?
Yes, the best way to do that is to go to the website of Angel Valley, and the website is www.angelvalley.org, and you will find all the information there. It will be
so
a very
Animist Hodges Skull is going to be there, and Synergy?
And Synergy, yes.
And yours, Sam, and the eight small Himalayans.
And at least, yeah, she hopes to get them all eight, but definitely several of them will be there. And some
and
of the larger ones
have?
As well.
How many others are you guardian to?
Well, we are the guardians, my wife Jeannie and I are the guardians of, I lose track of the count, to be honest. Every time I'm saying we have enough, then there is a skull that wants to join the group. So it's still increasing.
I'm laughing because as I sit here looking at my 17 or 18 skulls, too, I do realize that, you know, sometimes people think we're quite mad.
Oh, you know, you should see the face of people when they see this whole circle here of over 150 crystal skulls of all different sizes.
Is that how many you have?
Over 150.
Well, I can tell you that I live in Italy, and my maid, she just, it's really scary for her because there's so much superstition here. So when she comes to the house, I have to be sure to cover them up so she doesn't get spooked. But it's getting harder and harder to do that because they are more and more.
Yes.
And, of course, she can feel the energy even though she doesn't understand what's going on.
No, I understand that, yes. Yeah, so, you know, we are working with those group of crystal skulls quite extensively.
Sorry, I can't hear you very well.
Oh, I said we are working with the crystal skulls very extensively, but mainly to help ourselves and others to understand the energetics of it.
And how do you feel that working with the crystal skulls is part of our evolution at this time, and how are they helping us move forward toward let's call it the dawn of our anticipated evolution out of this density?
Well, in the first place, crystal skulls are, of course, those wonderful reflectors. So they help us literally to see what is going on in our lives if we are willing to look at it. So they give us that opportunity, and we know all that our belief structures that holds us sometimes in certain emotional states, if we can transform them and change them, can be very freeing, because that means that we can shift to higher frequencies that we then can work with. So the crystal skulls have this tremendous possibility of expanding frequencies, and we can literally grow with them. So what I see happening with people that, for example, come over a longer time to our Crystal Skull meditations, that all of them begin to clear out a lot of issues, are becoming far more aware, and actually are expanding, as the saying goes, their awareness or their consciousness in ways that they could not have imagined a couple of years ago. So they are such powerful tools to help us to understand ourselves and to make changes in our life so that we truly, truly can choose to go on the path of expanding, or we can call it evolution if you want. But nowadays we talk evolution about the spiritual evolution, consciousness evolution, and not anymore of evolution in the sense of now we are capable to use tools or now we are capable of using certain technology.
No, yeah, I was referring to our spiritual evolution.
Yeah,
not our technological evolution.
Exactly.
Which is, in many ways,
evolution.
Our spiritual devolution.
Yes.
All right, one quick question, because would you believe it? We're almost out of time, and we've just only started, and this is a phenomenon I verbalize every week because there's just not enough time to share with such wonderful guests like you. But I did want to ask you this. What do you think? Do you believe that this gathering, the return of the 12 original Atlantean skulls, is going to happen? Some people believe in 2012. That's the first question. And the second question is, where will you be?
Well, let me start with the last one. If I have the opportunity, I will be there, wherever there is. You know, I know there's a lot of people believe, and I saw that also in your book, that the Mayans will be the one that will call them finally together.
Uh-huh.
And that could be true. But
how
do
you feel about that? Does it resonate?
Yes, and I'd like to add something, if that's okay.
Of course.
I believe that it's correct, but we have to look at it from a larger perspective. What I mean with that is that many people who feel attracted to crystal skulls may have had in the past what I call Mayan lives. So it's not necessarily that it has to be a current Mayan. It has to be something of somebody or somebody that have such a deep connection that it doesn't matter how they look like in this moment in time.
I agree with that completely, and in my books it talks about the Mayans calling them back in, but that doesn't intend that they would all be Mayan current contemporary Mayan shamans.
No, and I could feel that. I could feel that, and I totally agree with that. That where it will be, you know, one of the interesting things is that most of the skulls that we know of are coming, and we know there are still many hidden, are somewhere in the Americas. And there are more people are believing that now the energy is moving from the east towards the Americas, because that is where the focal point is, where the earth energies also are beginning to focus.
Yes, I definitely believe that and have verbalized that. In fact, in Mexico, I had a workshop with 500 people, and when I told them, you are now, once again, the center of the earth is here, they wept. There were shamans in the audience, and they really wept at the idea that the power is coming back to them. Very powerful.
That's beautiful.
Moment.
And you know, Jab,
that recently I was invited but couldn't go to a gathering of 150 shamans.
Mm-hmm.
Each had their own skull, and this was taking place at Tikal.
Yep.
And Kayum, who is my dear brother, shaman brother in Palenque, told me that this is happening regularly.
Yeah.
So my best guess is this is a place to be. That's where Pat's going to be in 2012. I'm pretty sure. Somewhere near between Palenque and Tikal is where I'm going to point my arrow, as they say.
Yes, and I think that could be very, very well true. It is also, if you really look at the map and you see this large unit of North America, which is called, you know, the area of the eagle, and you see the large part of the mainland of South America, which is called the place of the condor. And the belief is that the condor and the eagle will meet in the time that people call 2012. Well, what is bridging those two big parts? It's Central America. It's Mexico. It's where the Mayans are. It's Mexico up till Belize and Guatemala. It's where the Mayan people live. They are literally the bridge between the North and the South. and they are literally the one where all the energy lines are literally going through their lands from the north to the south and the south to the north.
And as so the Mayans tell it, they're also the bridge between the dimensions.
Yes. Yes.
So they, let's start taking reservations for 2012, because would you believe it, but there are already people that are booking themselves to Palenque for 2012.
Already?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So I think it's great fun thinking about where you want to be in 2012.
Yes, yes, yes. To be truly honest with you, you know, I haven't been thinking about that. And one of the reasons is that so far I haven't been given any signals yet. And one of the things that I've learned over time is to trust that I will get the right signal in the right time.
Me too. And so the other is, to, in the inevitable discussion of where to be, I'm sure we'll both agree it's in your heart.
Exactly.
That is the most important place to be.
Yes, I know I will be in the right place in the right time. I have to have that trust, because otherwise it's not so easy anymore to work with all those energies and move forward. Because if my mind takes over, I may simply lose the direction that I feel that my heart is guiding me.
Well, anyone who's sitting on 150, not sitting on with any sense of negativity, sitting on in the most perfectly pure sense of being the guardian of 150 skulls, I'm pretty sure you're going to be called to something.
Oh,
and
yes,
I'm hoping
yes.
I'll be there with you, Jap, my brother. It'll be a really high moment for us all.
Yes, I really hope so, too. You know, and it's wonderful to have this exchange with you, because as I told you, I'm going to sit in front of the whole circle of crystal skulls with my favorite crystal skull, clear quartz crystal skull, Sam, next to me. You know, and I always feel that when we do that, we bring in more of that energy of the crystal skulls also for those people who are listening at this moment in time, whether they are aware of it or not. And that, you can say, the little gift we can give by having our wonderful exchange in this moment.
Indeed. And I'm sitting here in front of my 13 crystal skulls, one of which is the beautiful skull that was given to me by the Mayan shaman. And so we are connecting on that level. And I'm going to have to leave with that image for all of you who have had the opportunity to listen to Jap and his insights, and hopefully hear more and more about him as he continues to raise our consciousness with this material. And I'm sure more is coming, and I'm sure I can get him back on the show again, too. Yeah?
Okay, well, thank you so much for your invitation. And as always, it was wonderful to talk to you.
You too, Jap, and I'll be talking to you soon, and we'll catch up. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Remember, everybody, stay in that free-thinking zone outside of the box of conformity and let yourself soar with the eagle. This is Patricia Corey. My work is the Syrian Revelations. Please check me out on www.syrianrevelations.net. And to all my sisters in Amman who are listening, I didn't forget you. I send you all my love, and I'll be seeing you soon. So good night, everyone. It's Rome. It's nighttime here. And good day to the rest of you, and check in next week again, Beyond the Matrix. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.